You are listening to Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoops, on hoopfeed.com. Hi, everyone. This is David Siegel, your host for the weekly edition of the Dishin' and Swishin' podcast here on hoopfeed.com and also available to subscribe to on iTunes. As you know, if you followed my tweets and my writing on HoopFeed this weekend, I've been covering the Big East and the MAC postseason tournaments. It started at 9:30 on Saturday morning with the first of two semifinal games in the MAC tournament in Springfield, Mass. I went to two second-round games in the Big East after that Saturday evening in Hartford, four quarterfinal games in the Big East on Sunday, the MAC final on Monday back in Massachusetts, two Big East semifinals Monday night back in Hartford, and then finally, the Big East final Tuesday night. I saw a couple of overtimes, a few close games, a whole bunch of blowouts, and a lot of really questionable refereeing. I also got to hang and talk with some of the best commentators, journalists, coaches, and players in the business today, and had an absolutely great time talking to all of them. And all that feeds into this week's podcast that I have for you. We have a few interviews, and I know you're going to like them. First up is the Associate Commissioner for Women's Basketball for the Big East Conference, Danielle Donahue. A former player, coach, team administrator on both the college and WNBA levels, Danielle is a tremendous person with infectious enthusiasm for the conference she's building. The MAC tournament also had some fun moments this year, but watching Marist coach Brian Georges bursting with pride as he cuts down the pieces of the net was one of the best. I got to welcome Coach Georges back to Dishin' and Swishin' as he gets his team ready for another tournament. Finally, after all the hoopla and celebrating, I got to talk one-on-one with the young lady whose 2 3-pointers for Connecticut were called daggers by Muffet McGraw, Kelly Ferris. It's always fun talking to Kelly, and I know you're going to enjoy hearing from her. So, let's get it all started. On Saturday, I sat down with Danielle Donahue, the Associate Commissioner for Women's Basketball for the Big East Conference. Danielle played for Georgia Tech and was a student assistant coach there for Agnes Baronato. She then moved over to Tennessee, where she did a myriad of different jobs, including Director of Basketball of Operations, working directly with Pat Summitt. Danielle joined the WNBA when she became Executive Vice President of the Atlanta Dream, but in 2009, the lure of the college game brought her to the Big East Conference, where she's been ever since, molding and improving the women's basketball part of the conference, especially the tournament, which this year was fantastic. It was so fan-friendly, with not just the games, but also other events, like the appearances of the All-American Redheads, their display and their performances, and a chalk talk that featured luminaries such as Val Ackerman, Renee Brown, and Rebecca Lobo. We discussed the conference, the games, the tournament, and many things that are going on in the Big East. Welcome to a special part of this week's Dishin' and Swishin' podcast, and I'm pleased to be speaking right now, live and in person, not on the phone for a change, to Danielle Donahue, who is the Associate Commissioner of the Big East. Danielle, thank you for taking some time during the Big East tournament. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm excited to spend some time with you.
Well, let's talk about the Big East season, first of all, and getting up to this point. Now, the season, for a change, was wide open with Notre Dame and Connecticut and St. John's all playing so well. It had to be great for you as a ex-player to see these teams performing at such high levels throughout the regular season.
Absolutely. I'll tell you, the best part about my job is getting to attend so many games and encourage and support all of our teams. I'm very, very proud of the product that we have on the floor from a Big East perspective, and it's fun to be able to see our student athletes develop over the years as they continue to play inside their own systems and programs, but also to in terms of recruiting new talent. We've got some really, really great up-and-comers. So in terms of our league as a whole this year, I was really excited, very proud, and right now we have 7 teams ranked in the top 25 and 8th receiving votes, and it's tremendous in terms of the depth and the parity of our league.
One thing that you just mentioned that we were talking about last night is the youth in the league, that, you know, while there are some great seniors involved, no question about it, there are an awful lot of juniors and underclassmen that are coming back that are going to keep things exciting next year.
Yes, there are, and I'll tell you, our coaches in our conference are are very talented. We have a great group of coaches. Four of them are Hall of Famers, and a few of them that I think that one day will be Hall of Famers. And they do a great job of mentoring and recruiting some young people that will become hopefully all that they want to be. And I'm excited about the progress of our freshmen this year. You know, once you get into tournament time, they're no longer freshmen. They're considered sophomores and considered players that can be counted on by the time you get to the end of the season. And I think that's what we're seeing today in the Big East tournament and the progress that some of these young people have made.
One of the things that really jumped out at me in listening to some of the coaches in the press conferences yesterday, Doug Bruno, Jeff Walls, and you didn't see Vivian Stringer, all talked about, they kept saying the words, good people, great human being. They didn't just talk about their kids in terms of athletes and their athleticism and what they've done on the court, but they talked about the success that they were having as student athletes and being out in the community as well.
Well, yes, and I think that's one thing that's so special about the women's game. We have a number of student athletes and coaches alike that believe in giving back to the community and believe in cultivating that community around their campus, but also giving back to any of the communities that they travel to. As an example, here in Hartford, we have a program called Cheers for Hartford, where our bands, cheerleaders, dance teams, and mascots all make community visits here in the city while they're here for the tournament. And it's important to make sure that we have role models and teachers and coaches that are teaching these young people that to whom much is given, much is expected. And when they're given a platform where they get to play basketball and pursue something that they love so much, it's important to remember that they are role models and they need to give back to the community. One thing I'd love to highlight, our Scholar Athlete of the Year was Deshina Stevens from St. John's, and she was also one of our Sportsmanship Award recipients, and she does a tremendous job in her community, and we really wanted to recognize her.
One of the things that people may not have seen on television based on the coverage that we were able to see here that was kind of neat talking about the women's game was when each of the teams came out, there was a lineup of women, kids, youngsters that lined up on center court, and both teams went by and high-fived all the kids, and the kids were all smiling and having a great time. And that just is exactly what you're talking about, how, you know, one of the people that was with me even made the comment, you'd never see this at a men's game.
Well, maybe not, but for us, it's certainly a priority to give back to the community, and that what you just described was our half-court high-five program, and hopefully what that does is it allows these young people to be able to experience what it's like to be at center court before a big-time game, and hopefully they'll dream of playing on that court one day.
Now, a long time and a long lead time always goes into planning an event like this and planning a tournament like this. The one question that I do have to ask you is, Hartford, I love it here. Everybody talks about it very positively. But you look at a place like the KFC Yum Center that's doing so well in attendance. Is it more that the one response that I hear from people is that it's logistically more difficult than Hartford in particular, being out in Kentucky as opposed to being in the Northeast where most of the Big East is. With these influx of new teams coming into the Big East, is that something that would possibly influence Louisville getting to host this down the road someplace?
Well, absolutely. I think that it's important to understand that where we host our championship is certainly a direct result of the support of our membership, and it's very important to us to continue these discussions and have this as an agenda topic when we have our business meetings each year with our coaches and our athletics directors and our senior women's administrators, and the topic of where we host our championship is always on the agenda, and I would think that, you know, it will continue to be a topic that we will discuss. And I have been to the Yum Center and seen some wonderful games there. And I'll tell you, they have a very, very special building, a great facility, and some very dedicated fans in Louisville. So I certainly wouldn't count out the Yum Center or anywhere else in our conference. I think this is a topic that we'll continue to explore and talk about as a family. But for today and for this year and for our current current contract here in Hartford, I'll tell you, you can't deny the success that we've had in Hartford. You can't deny the support that we've had. This is our ninth year here in a row. It's tremendous the way the city of Hartford has embraced this event. And also, one thing that is kind of fun, next year we should have our millionth fan here in Hartford. So we're continuing to work toward that goal, and this year is just falling right in place. We've got a great support from the city, great support from the businesses, and then the fan experience that we're trying to provide for these fans, I'd like to think is special. We're continuing to tweak it each year to make sure that the folks that come and support our teams and cheer for our young athletes, that they have other things to do with their families, and it's a real robust experience.
Well, yeah, we should do this more often, because you give me the perfect segues, because the next question that I wanted to bring up was, I happened to be yesterday in the room, yes, when you were talking with the members of the All-American Redheads. And there is an exhibit here, if people aren't aware. The All-American Redheads are a group of wonderful women that toured the country for years, barnstorming, playing against, you know, football teams and other places while riding in a big limo, and they are finalists, finally, for the Naismith Hall of Fame, and hopefully will get in. But they have an exhibit that the Big East has brought in, an exhibit of the Redheads, some of the ladies themselves, and a lot of their memorabilia, and you were just having a blast in there looking at the things that were going on and talking to the ladies.
It was an absolute joy for me to be able to include them in our event. I think it's so important to really embrace and celebrate our history. The history of the game of women's basketball, the commitment and the sacrifice that so many people made before today to give us the platform that we have today. And the All-American Redheads are certainly a group of women that were so committed to growing our game years and years ago, and they deserve that recognition. And I'm so excited to be able to introduce them and give them a welcome and a nod and an important place here at our tournament, so that our fans can see what they've done. They can see the exhibit. They can interact with those ladies. And I'll tell you, they were doing some fun drills and shows and fake passes and all sorts of neat tricks that I wish I could do half of them. But it was really fun to see their joy and their commitment and their love and their passion for the game. And it hasn't wavered at all over the years. And we need to do more of that. We need to continue to bring in those that have come before us so we can make sure that our new generation of women's basketball players will never forget the history and the importance of what happened before them.
And in general, the XL Center looks wonderful. I mean, for people that haven't seen it before, this is an old building. I make no bones about it being, you know, a Connecticut resident, but they've decorated the atrium area beautifully. There are huge posters of representing each team. There are signed balls by each of the team out there for everybody to walk by and see and take pictures with. And there's the Big East Championship trophy is in there for where I saw a whole lot of people taking pictures as well. So you really are to be commended. Attendance has been very strong from what we've seen for the off games. You know, we saw a good crowd for Rutgers and Marquette, and we saw a good game this morning for what was not a very good game between West Virginia and Georgetown.
Well, that depends on if you like offense or defense. It was a very defensive game this morning.
Oh, I found it pretty offensive. But that's a different discussion altogether. So as we head towards the conclusion of this, with things you've seen, what have you enjoyed as the person that is, you know, in many ways in charge of all of this? What has been the favorite thing for you so far in the tournament, and what are you looking forward to the most?
Well, one of the things that's important to me is our team at the Big East. I'm very thankful for the surrounding cast, our teammates from our office, the people that have helped us from the Excel Center in the city of Hartford. I think that we've really worked well together this year for a very efficient event, and one that's quite organized, and you know, we're moving toward all the goals that we've set, and hopefully we will reach. But from a personal perspective, in terms of the tournament, I it's all about the student athletes for me. I'm excited to be able to see and be a part of trying to help give them a memorable experience, give them a championship experience where they'll get to compete and do their best and have a memory that they can bring with them or take with them for years and years to come. And just one other thing to throw in is I think it's important as ambassadors of our game and as, if you will, as guardians of our game, it's important to incorporate a historical perspective because our game is growing so fast right now. Our young athletes are getting better and better every year, and it's important that we don't forget what's come before us. So for me, I think there's quite a few things that are crucial. One is the team atmosphere of our staff putting this on, the student athlete piece, and then finally the ability to kind of give back to the historical perspective.
Well, I think with you and LaChyna Robinson being here from Wake Forest, and we'll have Kara Walters and Neil Ivey coaching for Notre Dame. Maybe we could put together an alumni game next year.
Well, we certainly we might be able to play horse or do some fun tricks. We may be able to run up and down the floor a little bit, but
you could have outscored Georgetown at West Virginia.
Well, I don't know about that. They play some great defense.
That they do. Danielle, I want to thank you for taking time, and I want to wish you continued success and enjoy the rest of the tournament. It really has been very well run, and it's been a lot of fun to be at.
Well, David, I really appreciate you being here. I appreciate your coverage of the women's game, and I hope that for your listeners, you know, that we'll continue to support the Big East Conference. We have something very special, and I hope we'll continue to move that needle forward and provide more and more opportunities for young people.
Hi, this is Muffet McGraw, head coach at the University of Notre Dame, and you're listening to Dishin' and Swishin'.
The big man is back to the big dance. Marist won the MAC tournament Monday afternoon in Springfield, and Brian Georges has the Red Foxes dancing as conference champions for the seventh consecutive year. He's done it with great teams. He's done it with good teams. He's had the Conference Player of the Year five straight years, and he's been named Coach of the Year three of the last 5 years. He has a system that works. He recruits toward that system, gets the right players, and coaches the heck out of them. I've gone on record as saying that Georges is one of, if not the best in the country, at coaching. We talked about his championship team and his success at Marist.
Hi, everybody. This is David Siegel on Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoops on Hoop Feed each week. And I am talking to a man who I have said many times over that if not the best, he is certainly one of the very best coaches in America. And we're fortunate, being in the Northeast, that we get to see the Marist Red Foxes from time to time, and we get to see Coach Brian Georges, who is back on the show because, once again, they've won another MAC championship. And, Coach, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dave. Great to be here.
Well, Coach, you know, it got a little nervous there in the semifinals. You know, people don't realize they looked at the records and they saw that Niagara had a losing record for the season, but they had taken you to overtime and they were really riding a hot streak.
Well, they had been probably one of the hottest teams in February. And at their place, we went to double overtime and actually had to hit a three late to tie it. And actually we had to make three stops, one in regulation, or actually two in regulation, one in the first overtime, just to get to the second overtime. So, I mean, they're a very tough team. And, you know, they've been playing well, and they're very young, too, which makes them doubly dangerous for next year.
Well, you know, one of the things that makes Marist what it is the fact that, you know, you have got this team that believes in the system that you have put into place, and they executed to near perfection, and that was exactly what happened in that second half. Yeah, they were down, and they just were patient and did what they had to do on both ends of the court.
Well, I think the biggest key was we didn't panic. When we got down 13 with about 12 minutes to go, you know, they didn't panic. You know, we didn't start full-court pressing, which is not our thing. We didn't start adding to the pressure and stuff. What we needed to do was make shots. We had shots during the game. You know, we had stopped turning the ball over from the first half, and we were getting shots. We just weren't making. All of a sudden, you know, it just snowballed. We started hitting shots, and, you know, we slowly creep back into it. And, you know, and again, I think the big key is we were more patient in our offense.
And then the final came on Monday against a very good Fairfield team with some really good talent on that team. And Joe Frager, an excellent coach. And you guys just never even gave him a chance. He came out playing Marist basketball right from the get-go, hitting shots, really playing some stifling defense, and just never even gave them an opportunity to get into the game.
Yeah, well, I think what happened to them in the championship game was what happened to us in the semifinal. I mean, I think we made it difficult for them to get good looks. It's not like they were turning the ball over, but, you know, when they did get good looks, they didn't knock them down, and we started shooting the ball well from the beginning. And the good part for us was that we just never let them back in. I think they cut it to 7 once in the first half. We got it up to 12 in the second half, and then after they scored the first bucket, you know, it's kind of hard to come back when you've missed 17 shots in a row. So, I mean, I think part of it was our defense, but I think part of it was, you know, they rushed some shots and they had good looks and just didn't knock them down. And that happens.
Well, you know, one thing was for sure is also in that game was that your upperclassmen really stepped up and did the job that was expected, I'm sure, from you. And that in particular, you know, of course, Brandy Gang had struggled in the semifinals and came up big early, especially early in the first half when you guys opened the lead. And then Corey Elyard, who's the conference player of the year, was all conference first team last year. And she just, you know, was shooting daggers in the second half.
Well, you know, like I say, a real unsung hero for us in this weekend was Leanne Ockaden. And mostly because she ended up, you know, being the vocal leader. When we were down like 8 or 10, you know, in the second half against Niagara, she went over to Coryell and just said, you know, Coryell, you're a senior. You need to step it up. And she did. And, you know, it's tough for a sophomore to say that to a senior. But, you know, sometimes we're so balanced and so team-oriented that, you know, we didn't have anybody stepping up. And all of a sudden, once Coryell did, you know, the rest of the team followed.
And for people that have not in New England and don't know anything about the Fairfield Stags, their point guard, Desiree Pena, is really the heart and soul of that team. And that's who Leanne had played in that entire game in the final. So it's not just her leadership vocally with people like with Corey Allen getting them motivated. She just played some real shutdown defense against Pena in particular.
Well, the interesting thing, I mean, the last 2 years, our MAC Defensive Player of the Year, you know, and very well deserving, Katie Sheehan from Loyola, you know, led the league both years in steals, ranked nationally and stuff, you know, and you get a kid like Leanne who every game just shuts people down, you know, every starter, you know, Niagara's leading scorer, Kayla Strowman, you know, 5 for 18. And that's what you get. They might score double figures, but they take a lot of shots to do it. And, you know, all three games this year, Leanne has done a great job where Desiree was the leading scorer the other day with 9, but, you know, had trouble getting shots off, had trouble, you know, in the other two games, 4 for 14, that type of thing. And that's what Leanne's done all year, but it doesn't show up on a stat sheet where you lead the conference in steals or rebounds or block shots. You know, she just goes in and day out and guards the best person, and her length really has caused trouble. You know, she guards the best guard, no matter if it's a point guard, small forward, or shooting guard.
Well, Coach, this was a little bit of a strange year for your team. Well, start with the fact that you actually lost a conference game.
Well, the amazing part, the thing that we were most proud of, is that we only lost one. You know, we lost an awful lot from last year. You know, you lose your player of the year in Erica Allenspa, who literally carried us in last year's MAC tournament. I don't think anybody else played really that well last year other than her, and probably gave one of the greatest performances in the history of the MAC. Then you lose Elise Caron, who was your defensive stopper last year and was playing very well at the end of the year, and you lose your 6'4 starting center who transfers to Southern Cal. Then, you know, your point guard from the year before, the starting point guard, you thought you'd be okay, and then she tears an ACL in the sixth game, and now you don't have any point guard with experience other than a freshman with six games and another one that hadn't played in any. In fact, you know, that's what saved our year was Casey Doolin stepped in, and she had only played garbage time point guard the year before. I mean, she was a two player, and she stepped in and just really saved our season.
That's one of the things that makes Marist such an incredible program, is that year after year, there's an evolution that you can see happening with the players, and that's what good coaching is all about, is that, you know, you lose players, and yes, this team did lose seven games this year, which is more than you had in the past, but you did also play a very difficult out-of-conference schedule. But the thing is, you had Doolin, you had Bainan, you had Ockenden that have all stepped in and improved and played more of a role. And Coriel, you could see over the course of her career, I mean, even just the short term that I saw in the last few years, her game this year was so much more complete than it was in the prior year.
Oh, absolutely. Most of us remember her freshman year where we had to take her out of the Iona game in the semifinal because she was in tears on the floor because it was just so bad. And you know, we knew she had a lot, you know, a great skill set, but, you know, we just had to keep working with her. And I give my assistant coaches, you know, an awful lot of credit, especially, you know, in that case, associate head coach Megan Jevia, who just, you know, really worked with these kids. This year, Elisa Kresge working with Natalie Gomez and Aaron Ledger working with Casey Doolin. Really working with them to try to improve the weaknesses of their game so that, you know, when they get out in big games and stuff like that, you know, that those weaknesses don't get exposed and they actually starting to get, you know, turn them into strengths.
Well, the team this year dropped a couple of them, one to Princeton, one to St. Bonaventure, one to Kansas State. You know, those are not exactly teams that...
They're not cream puffs, that's for sure.
Exactly. Exactly. So as you get ready to look for the tournament, I know seeding really doesn't mean much to you. I mean, you've played different teams at all different seed levels. But how do you, let's instead talk about how playing against teams like that you think is going to help you prepare for the next level.
Well, you know, that's what you hope is, since you've played those people and have at least, even though we didn't win them, you know, like we lost to Kansas State by one at home, you know, with Princeton and St. Bonaventure, you know, you're tied with 5 minutes to go, or you're within two or four with, you know, 5 minutes to go. In fact, actually, the St. Bonaventure really was the saving game in the non-conference schedule because it was Casey Doolin's first game at the point. You're playing a top 25 team at their place, and you're tied with 5 minutes to go, and you only have 10 turnovers. So, you know, that along with beating Auburn from the Southeast Conference, and, you know, and then playing Hofstra where, you know, it came down to we had a layup disallowed at the end of regulation to lose by two. You know, even though you lose those games, it gives them confidence because they know they're playing against higher-level conferences and playing well.
And being here from Connecticut, I know the advantage and the value that you get when you have fans that travel. And the Marist fans are some of the most loyal and some of the loudest. And they travel really, really well, no matter where you guys end up going. And before you comment on that, the band just rocks.
Yes, it does. It really does. It's big. It's loud. And, you know, we've only lost two games in the last 6 years in the conference, and they were both in one seat. So we've had five out of the last 6 years we've been unbeaten at home. And I think a lot of it is because opponents haven't played in that type of atmosphere with that type of band and, you know, packed houses. And, you know, it's like I say, you know, one thing we do appreciate is our band and our fans. You know, they and our dance team and our cheerleaders, our kids even had pictures taken with both of them at the end of the championship the other day. They know, you know, that these people are important in our success, and it motivates them and pumps them up. And, you know, who would think that the women's championship game would outdraw the men? And a lot of it's because of our fans.
Well, all I know is that when I tweeted how great the band was during the conference tournament, a friend of mine from Duke sent me back a note that said that they really tore it up at Cameron last year, that they were so good. And when somebody else said, well, we have a good band too, and I said, you guys have two drummers, and they all just said, no. So there is no substitute for the Marist band.
No, that's for sure. Art Himmelberger does a wonderful job there.
Well, Coach, you're certainly the orchestra leader of this program. Yeah, do you like those little segues? You know how you can make this work? I want to congratulate you once again on winning another championship. And again,
thank you,
the honors, you know, 3 out of 5 years now, Coach of the Year in the conference. You know, this is 7 consecutive conference championships that you'll be going into the tournament riding from that umbrella. I mean, it's quite a run that you've had there, and it just the success continues.
Well, I've always told people I have the best staff going, and I have players who believe in the system. And when you get those two things going, you've got a great chance always.
Well, Coach, you know, somebody asked the question then in the post-game press conference, and, you know, it happens here. I'm going to tell you again here, too, now. Coach, you do a wonderful job sharing the credit and deflecting the praise that you get. But there is no doubt that you are a phenomenal coach in-game and pre-game prep and in the recruiting business. And congratulations on everything that you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Dave.
And we'll see you somewhere in the tournament. Looking forward to watching the Red Foxes.
Yep. Okay. Thanks an awful lot, Dave. I appreciate the call.
You take care, Brian. Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Elena Deladon, and you're listening to Dishin' and Swishin'.
Well, unless you've been living under a rock and you are listening to this podcast, so you must know that the Big East tournament concluded on Tuesday with the University of Connecticut winning the tournament, ending their 3-game losing streak to Notre Dame. In the process, they earned the conference's automatic bid, but the Huskies have had somewhat of an up-and-down season this year, especially on the offensive end. No one has taken more heat for that, probably, than forward Kelly Ferris. Ferris is known for doing the little things on the court, and that's what endears her to Husky fans. She sets screens, she rebounds, she defends, but she has struggled offensively for sure. Ferris, however, hit the 2 3-point shots Tuesday night that Notre Dame coach Muffet McGraw called daggers. After the celebrating, I got to talk to Kelly one-on-one about her season, her role, and their championship.
Hi, Kelly.
Hey.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Kelly, most people around here will freely admit that you're the heart and soul of the team with the lunch bucket attitude and things that you did. Did you take extra pressure on yourself the last couple struggles? You seemed like you were pressing even harder.
Especially when you're an upperclassman. And, you know, I'm a junior, and coach looks at us to figure everybody out, you know, to get everybody together and to be the leaders on the team. And so when we take those losses, you know, that we got to take responsibility for that. And especially I felt a lot on me. You know, I know he looks at specific people for certain things, and I felt like, you feel like you let everybody down. You know, you feel like you let the coaching staff down. You feel like you let your teammates down. You know, those younger guys, they're expected to do a lot, and they don't know what it's about yet. You know, when you lose 4 games in a season, and especially the last couple, you're going to take that to heart, and you're going to try to do anything possible that you can to get your team out of that rut.
Now, Muffet said that year 3 is where the difference. So, yeah, how does that make you feel with the confidence in your shot and just feeling that you can continue on this path now? And then also piggybacked on that is, how difficult is it going to be now to sit for a couple weeks and wait for the next game?
That's difficult. That's a difficult part because we have the momentum now. It's like, all right, let's get out there and start the tournament tomorrow. But that doesn't happen. So, you know, this is good for us to enjoy it now and know what we're capable of and be ready to come into practice the next day and just go at it and build on it. We can't, at this point in the season, we can't take steps back. So it is difficult to wait, but, you know, we're ready to get back into practice and to get going and to see what else we have to offer. As for the shots, I don't know. I appreciate that she said that. But I think there were a lot of other moments in the game, key moments, whether they were getting a key rebound or drawing a foul from some of their key players, that a lot of them did, especially Steph and Tiffany. It's hard to just single out anybody. Everybody had their moment. Bria went on a streak. Like I said, tonight was a total team effort. So.
Notre Dame always talks about playing all 40 minutes. UConn does. St. John's breaks it down into those four-minute segments they always talk. Now, it seems like with what you're talking about, with the way the teams, but you guys probably not intentionally, but did just that. You broke it into those four-minute segments, and if you struggled in one, somebody else picked it up the next.
Yeah, I guess this probably is kind of what happened tonight. Like you just said, we know that other teams, such as Notre Dame or those better teams, they're going to go on their runs. They're going to get it. We can't hold them the whole game. They're good teams, they're good players, they're smart. And so we know they're going to go on their run, but that's when we can't back down. You know, there's a few games there where they did that and then we backed down. That's when we have to punch back and get our run and keep it that way type of thing. So, like you said, within each segment, somebody different stepped up every time.
Did it smart having to wear the blue uniforms here and using the other locker room and using the other bench?
That was different. Obviously, none of us have had to do that. And it was different, but at the same time, you just have to kind of, you know, it is what it is. We got ourselves in that position, and it's just the game of basketball, whether you're on that side or this side, white or blue jersey. Yeah, you'd like to be in the white, but it's still basketball. It's still the same.
Since you're not one of the tweeters, there is one thing I just want to share with you, though.
Okay.
In the middle of the game, Gary Kloppenberg is the head coach of the Tulsa Shock.
Mm-hmm.
Tweeted, Kelly Ferris makes my all lunch pail team. Not flashy, but does the little things to win. How does that make you feel?
Pretty good. That's awesome that he would think that of me, and definitely appreciate that. It means a lot. And that's the stuff I take pride in. That's how I've been brought up. That's how I've always been coached, is to do the little things. And, you know, if somebody's, you know, hitting every shot, I'm going to go get them open, or at least I'm trying. And if I'm not, I'm looking for somebody to reinforce me to remember to do that. But if that's my role, that's my role. And I feel like that's one of my main roles on this team. And I came here because this is a program that's all about the team. And you know, that's what I like to do. And so I really appreciate him saying that.
One last thing is, now I asked Gino about it. I said, now I don't know if you remember the Michael Jordan commercials for the Jordans with Spike Lee, when he used to talk about it's got to be the shoes. Well, is it number 23? Does it got to be the jersey?
Oh man, there's been some great players with that number. I tell you that right now. I don't know. You know,
you just still look over and there's number 23 hitting big shots. It doesn't matter who it is, who's in it.
Hey, you might want to do a study on that one because that might be part of it. If so, I'm about to take that jersey. No, I'm just kidding. You know, something to say about the players that have worn that number, though. Pretty amazing players and have done a lot. So.
Thanks, Kelly.
No problem.
Good luck down the next rounds.
Thank you.